Shareable is part of C-Suite Radio. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this either is or will become your favorite podcast. This is Shareable, the podcast so good, you got to tell someone about it. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. And every episode, I talk with someone about the impact that people and technology have had on their career and their lives. So, let's get to it. Hello, hello. I have on the line with me today somebody who I've been listening to for quite a while via one of my favorite podcasts, 6 Pixels of Separation, and he was nice enough to come on to my show, Mr. Joseph Jaffe. So, Mr. Joseph Jaffe, please tell people who you are and what you do.
You're sounding a bit like Mitch now.
I know. I stole that direct from him. So, who are you and what do you do?
So I am Joseph Jaffe. I am the CEO and founder of a company called Evolution, which is an innovation boutique that is in the business of helping corporates connect with and partner, collaborate with startups, particularly early stage startups, to solve real business problems. I've also written 4 books. I wrote 13 years ago, I wrote Life After the 32nd Spot. Then Join the Conversation, then Flip the Funnel, and most recently Zero, which is Zero Paid Media as the new marketing model. And, you know, before this whole entrepreneurial experience of mine with Evolution and before that Crayon and writing books, I worked for Madison Avenue. I was an agency guy, but I always say don't hold that against me.
Yeah, actually, that's funny. I completely forgot. You've mentioned that before, but I forgot that you were a madman. I hear Don Draper was based entirely on your life.
I was certainly mad.
So,
if anything.
Yeah, that's funny. Quick question for you. Where did Jaffe Juice come from? Total non sequitur or anything we're going to talk about, but where did that as your username come from? Was that like an AOL thing?
No, and you know, it's funny. Everybody talks about the, you know, whatever side of the personal branding debate you're on. But what happened to me was when I left the agency world, I had been going to an event at the time called iMedia. And iMedia, twice a year, they had agency summits and twice a year brand marketer summits. And the business model was very simple. You know, the agency person twice a year got a free pass and all expenses paid trip to the summits, and in return got inundated and cornered by all the sponsors and the media sellers and the technology companies. So I'd been there as an agency guy. I'd sat on a few panels, great little schmooze fest slash boondoggle, no doubt. And when I went out on my own, the founder of the company approached me I eventually became their editor at large, but to start writing a weekly column. This was pre-blogging. So it was a weekly column for iMedia Communications. And actually he said, why don't we kind of brand the column? Why don't we give it a name or something that you know, kind of is true to your approach, you know, which is this kind of passionate, irreverent, a little provocative, approach to the business. And so we brainstormed a bit and we came out with Jaffe Juice, which was the idea. It's the juice from Jaffe giving you the juice. And of course, you know, the juice on whatever the case may be. And so Jaffe Juice was born, and it just became my kind of, you know, my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle. And I just became Jaffe Juice and everything. And of course, when I started blogging, I called my blog Jaffe Juice, and the rest is history.
That's brilliant. Did you get upset when the whole real name policy thing kicked in and you were like, but I have this really cool brand?
I mean, I've never been upset. I'm only upset about the fact that there's now a franchise called Joe and the Juice. So I'm wondering if I should be suing them, because I kind of feel like it might have been stolen from me. Although I have had the smoothies there and they're very tasty. But no, you know, the only thing that I've actually thought about is I wonder during the Twitter, you know, because I was literally on Twitter within days, weeks, or months of them launching. I wonder if I would have been able to get at Joe or at Joseph. I just went straight for Jaffe Juice at the time, but I'll never know.
That's interesting. And by the way, I don't think you should sue them, but if you do, you should do it in exchange for juice. And at the very least, we can publicly shame them on this podcast. So
I'm not in the suing business. You know, but the actual funny story there was, you know, the phrase "join the conversation," which mm-hmm. you've seen
a bazillion times
every time. Right. And I mean, look, I mean, I wrote a book called "Join the Conversation" in 2007, and I'd be curious as to I don't know who created the phrase. It might have been me. It might not have been me. But I always joke that a lot of people told me to trademark it, and I just felt, you know, sure, maybe I'm a bad businessman for not trademarking it, but I think it might have been just slightly hypocritical to say "join the conversation," TM. So sometimes you just got to do the right thing.
Yeah, join the conversation, which happens to be mine. And if you use it, you owe me a nickel.
Exactly.
Yeah, it seems like that would be kind of rude. all right, well, I want to ask you some questions about different aspects of how your career has played out, kind of what you're up to now, and through the lens of what I'm really interested in. But where I like to generally start is I like to get a sense of how my guests use technology. And you've been in this game for a while. So I'm just going to ask you a couple quick questions just so that I get a sense where I can orient myself around how you use technology. So the first is, are you an early adopter, late adopter, or somewhere in the middle?
I am an early adopter at times. And then I kind of, not so much that I'm a late adopter, but I try and pick my battles, and I try and make a decision if I don't feel that a piece of technology is ultimately going to scale and catch on. So, you know, was very early with you know, back in the day with Second Life. And I still think, I still believe in the virtual, I mean, now we're calling it virtual reality, but the virtual worlds and what that brought to the table. You know, with Twitter, there were three. There was, I think, Pounce, Jaiku, and Twitter, and there was about placing a bet, you know, back in the Meerkat and Periscope days, the same thing. And I think, you know, you've got to be, you know, look at Pokemon Go. Yeah, I got on Pokemon Go and I was playing around with it, but I never came out being this booster for Pokemon Go. I mean, I think there's probably Pokemon Go for dummies and people that have written books now that have spoken about this being a revolution, and I'm not really sure it is. So that's where I kind of flip between either get on early or avoid. And maybe the weird exception to that is Snapchat. I was on Snapchat right at the beginning, told my kids about it. They were like, "Dad, come on, that's so uncool." Now they're like on it and addicted to it, and I don't understand what the hell is going on with Snapchat. I'm avoiding it.
That's interesting.
I've become the bah humbug now of Snapchat.
I've kind of been bah humbug about Snapchat from very early on, but I'm going to coin you as a discerning early adopter. And I was actually, it's interesting, I'm glad you brought up Snapchat, because I was going to follow up and ask you real quick about that, kind of what you thought, given that, you know, I don't know exactly when this episode will publish, but it was yesterday when we're recording it that they filed and had their IPO. So I wanted to get a sense of what you thought as a discerning early adopter of that company and where you think it might head.
Well, look, it's a very relevant conversation. And actually, you know, I was on a podcast yesterday, believe it or not. So two podcasts in 2 days.
Look at you. And you're really starting to go places.
I think this podcast thing might catch on. The funny thing is, I think in their IPO, when they're filing, they've actually classified themselves as a camera company. And that is kind of, I didn't know that. So, I mean, I didn't know if you knew that and how many of your listeners know that. And that kind of blew me away. And what I said on the podcast is, it's interesting. We all, you know, either we were misdirected or we all kind of took the wrong path. We all looked at the chat part instead of the Snap part. And we branded them a social network. which is the chatbot. But the reality is they've seen something that we haven't, which is clearly this idea of being in the snap business, the camera business, and where that will go and what they will do with it remains to be seen. I think the key is never to, you know, I always say this, it's a very, very important point, which is, you know, it's very dangerous to live, you know, on the extremes. You know, this is great, this sucks. You know, this is amazing, this is terrible. Love, hate. I mean, they're very powerful emotions. They're actually very powerful emotions. But the reality is that ultimately we always have to find equilibrium and somewhere in the middle. And so I think it's very dangerous to boost a technology and say, this is going to take over the world. You heard it here first. And it's equally dangerous to kind of poo-poo a new technology and be the skeptic in a sense. So the discerning early adopter I like, because ultimately it's not just the compromise and the balance, but it's also about something that I feel very strongly about, which is too often we have tactics in search of strategy. We have solutions to non-existent problems. What we say at Evolution is we talk about technology solutions to real business problems. So if you're not solving a problem and if you're not mapping it to strategy, then what are you doing? And so often in the case of these new technologies, we don't, you know, when we're busy bad-mouthing them or, again, poo-pooing them, you know, it is because we haven't yet actually tried them out. And even if we have, we still haven't connected the dots in terms of what their use case is and how we can actually see that kind of and sometimes we need that. You know, even with virtual reality, when you start to see virtual reality in specific use cases, for example, travel and tourism, I recently keynoted I actually spoke at an entire country's travel and tourism kind of office in front of their minister of travel and tourism. And I basically said, guys, I'm not being, you know, over the top here when I tell you, you should reduce your entire print and television budget to zero. Well, I mean, the keynote was called Zero, which is my fourth book, and just focus on virtual reality. Don't tell people you're awesome. Show them, bring them, you know, kind of transport them to your beautiful country and let them see firsthand. But I don't know that I would be saying the same thing to Procter & Gamble's Tide.
Got it. Did you happen to, by the way, I don't know if you you know who Mark Schaefer is, but I don't know if you guys are connected or anything, but he wrote a really interesting commentary on the whole snapping thing yesterday, where he was talking about how he mentioned that piece where they filed as a camera company and saying that he saw it as a challenge for them because they don't actually have a competency in building actual hardware outside of the spectacles, which has been a successful marketing launch, but from an actual product standpoint has met with sort of lackluster or mixed results. So I don't know if you had seen that, but if you're connected with them on Facebook, definitely check it out. It's a good post.
Well, I know I actually do know Mark, and I will go and seek it out as well. But you know what it does do is it gets it makes you think and it keeps you guessing. And whether it's misdirection or whether, in fact, we have just been kind of, you know, barking up the wrong tree, who knows? But I will say that I am a big fan of companies, you know, and the example I've been using a lot lately is, you know, Apple Computer became Apple, right? Amazon.com became Amazon. Amazon started as a, you know, I mean, we all know this, right? An online bookseller. They are definitely not an online bookseller anymore. So,
and they have that new grocery chain that they're doing in Seattle. So that's why you can drop the .com, right?
Well, and they, you know, now I think they just won a bunch of Academy Awards as well, let alone Emmys and Golden Globes. So, you know, so we've certainly seen that they've not only transformed themselves in a very, very small, limited, you know, amount of time. Isn't it interesting how it's the Snapchats and the Amazons of the world and, you know, to a lesser extent, the Apples of the world, when all these big monolithic slow-moving companies are still talking about, you know, 130 years being in the packaged goods business. All I know is that those companies, if they are to survive and thrive in over the next 130 years, Well, most certainly not doing it by being packaged goods companies.
I feel like there's so many paths we could go down. I mean, just even the VR conversation, how bullish you are on that concept. I feel like you and I could have an hour-long conversation on that. But I want to pivot back to, because I think there's just so many things to go at with that. But I want to go through my quick questions, a few more of them, and then I want to ask you about a particular piece of technology that made an impact on you. So the next thing I want to know is in terms of how you would rate yourself as a technology user, do you, like on a scale of 1 to 10, do you think that you're like one of the heavier tech people, or is it just more that you have an insight into the value of those things? Like your actual usage, do you think that you're a tech savvy kind of person?
I think I always have been, but I also recognize that where I am in my life and in my quite literally based on my age and based on the fact that that I'm not the new kid on the block or the youngest kid in the room anymore, that is changing too. So, for example, even if you take something like Tinder. Or dating. I never used a dating app ever. They just weren't around when I was dating. And so, you know, it's all very well to talk about it, but the concept of swiping and swiping left and swiping right, you know, there's a bit of a kind of a detachment that happens or a kind of a knowledge gap that happens. And so I think, you know, again, going back to the concept of discerning early adopter, what I do believe is that you really have to try technology yourself in order to get a true sense of its capability and its applicability in a sense. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely call myself a tech adopter and tech savvy. You know, can I go and you know, kind of hack my internal network? Not really. You know, should I have Apple TV at home? Yes, but I just haven't got round to it. So, you know, somewhere in the middle, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, every time I've ever heard you speak and just in this brief part of the conversation we've had so far, you I feel like you have such a keen insight onto how all these things fit. Do you really, I mean, I feel like I could ask you about Tinder and you'd probably have a lot to say about it, even having not played with it. So I feel like to a certain extent, you don't need to necessarily play it to or to use a particular technology to have an insight. I mean, you probably haven't made too many VR videos. Or VR worlds, but I think you probably have a lot to say about it. So again, I think, you know, in that sort of discerning early adopter sort of thing, I would even say that you're an insightful technology user, even amongst things that you're not using.
And there is a very important point amidst all of this, which is, you know, when you have an organizing framework, it really helps to be able to compartmentalize better and segment better. And that's really kind of the strategic planning side of my own skill set. So for example, here's something we use at Evolution. If you go and, you know, there have been numerous studies, CEO studies, that talk about the three biggest priorities for a corporate CEO is growth, customer intimacy, and competitive advantage. So we've taken that and we've kind of organized startups and startup value propositions and technology for the most part into three categories. What we call better, cheaper, faster, which is kind of the crawl, utility and service, which is the walk, and then disruption, which is the run. And so in many respects, it helps to, and if you have that construct or that framework, no matter what technology is presenting itself, you know, it should fall into one of those three categories. And obviously if it doesn't, you need to kind of evolve, you know, that methodology. You know, the reason why we called the company Evolution there's a great Charles Darwin quote, which is, it is not the strongest of species that survives, nor the most intelligent, but the one that is the most adaptable to change.
I think it was in our first episode, we had a guy named Doug Sandler on, and he was quoting Jeffrey Hazlett, who I believe the quote was, adapt, change, or die. Which is a very non-nuanced way of saying kind of what you just said.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty good way to think about it too. And I think, you know, the corollary of it is, you know, I don't know whether how family friendly the podcast is, but you can
swear. You can swear. You can say whatever.
Well, I'm not going to swear terribly, but sometimes, you know, the corollary of what I'm saying is what I call SSDD, which stands for same shit, different day. Mm-hmm. You know, and so in many respects, that's, as I said, that's the corollary, because what you see in business time and time again is just history repeating itself. So when you look at how business has adapted to digital, to social, to mobile, to emerging platforms, to startups, same thing, which is kind of, you know, there's initially the gold rush and the land grab. People kind of get their, hands burnt or fingers burnt. They recoil in shock and horror and terror, and then they come back slowly but surely when they realize that ultimately, you know, this thing, this trend is consumer led. We've just seen it so many times. The same thing applies with respect to how they go to market. They always try and do it themselves because of hubris, because of arrogance, because that's what they used to, controlling the whole situation. That doesn't work out. So then their agency will come in and say, yeah, we can do that. We can do that. They're a kind of agency of record, and they can't. The first thing they typically do is they go and outsource to a company like ours. And eventually the dust settles. And of course, who ends up kind of growing and ultimately, you know, kind of building best practices and competency and capability, which is the specialist or the subject matter expert. And so when you just see history repeating itself, it's the same thing with technology, which is, you know, it's falling into one of those three categories. What I do is I do a lot of startup mentoring. And, one of the things I do when I talk to startups is I say to them, there are three types of startups, right? You're going to either fall into one of these three categories. One is it was broken and we fixed it. So that's kind of like you could maybe look at Uber in that category. You know, supply and demand was inefficient and full of friction. Then there was it was good and we made it great. So it was kind of working. But we said, like, how can we make it even more efficient in a sense? Like, if you look at OpenTable, for example, I'm not sure that the whole reservation system of restaurants was broken, but they've certainly created a more efficient mechanism of improving on it. And then you've got, you know, the third category, which I just call basically, and I won't swear too much, but an effing cool idea. And I think Airbnb sits into that category because Airbnb's got a little bit of the first two categories. I don't know that the hotel business and the inn and bed and breakfast business was broken. It certainly could have been improved on, but no one, and I mean no one, could have seen the fact that we would actually rent out a room in our house or our entire apartment to a stranger. And they've done it in the most incredible way.
So do you think that I completely agree with all those three, but after you said the first two, what kind of ran through my head, I was trying to predict what your third one was going to be. My thought was, what about this didn't exist and we made something that you never even thought could exist? Is that part of that third category where it's the really fucking cool idea, or is that something else entirely? Or did I just come up with a fourth one?
Well, you, first of all, you said the F word. No, I didn't.
I was opening it up for you.
Yeah, thank you. I think that third category, I think it's one and the same, right? Which is it didn't exist and we created it. Again, if it wasn't a cool idea, then why did we even do that? What was the point in creating that? That to me is not a category in of itself. You know, that is technology for technology's sake. But I'm agreeing with you that I think what you said is in fact the same as the third category. And it can stand alone as that, right? Which is, it was broken, we fixed it, it was good, we made it great, or it didn't exist and we created it. We created the market. It's a great strategic play to create a space and create a market. In some cases, when you look at Target versus, you know, the whole cheap chic and Target, they created a market by contraction, by actually not fighting the Kmart v. Walmart kind of bottom of the barrel bargain basement pricing. They were like, wait a second, yeah, we're still in the kind of discount retail business, but what if we could actually do it in a stylistic way? So they created a market, and now many, many companies have kind of, you know, slipstreamed into that space as well. So that would fit your third category.
So you mentioned that, you know, these companies have such a hard time adapting to these changes, and you know, as both you and I being people that are in the world of technology in some capacity, you know, I believe we're all impacted and touched by technology, but we are of the type that embrace that change, right? Like you're a discerning early adopter, which means you're willing to try things, see them, think about them, and look at how they fit. Why do you think it is that there are so many businesses that fail at this when, you know, when you look at social media, this has been something that's been going on for, you know, a decade now, at least in a real actual conversation about how it impacts business. Why is there still so much resistance? Is it an age thing? Is it just that humans are naturally resistant to change and there's only a small handful that move forward? Like, you know, in the outsource to us conversation, why is it so hard to make those things move?
You know, I think one of there are many reasons, right? Which is risk aversion, fear of failure, bureaucracy, dysfunction, politics, etc. But I actually think one of the biggest challenges right now is the lack and the loss of momentum. And what I mean by that is the constant reorging and restructuring and budget cuts and talent defections, and a new CMO comes in, and then what's the first thing they do? They fire the agency and they go on a whole, search for a new agency, and that whole process takes 6 to 9 months, and then everybody's kind of, you know, confused about the fact that, that the tenure of the CMO is so short. It's so short because it takes them almost half of that tenure or a quarter of that tenure just to be able to change the agency when the reality is they need to change their processes and change their culture. So I would say it's one of two things. It is ultimately, I mean, if it ladders up to one thing, it is a culture that does not lend itself to experimentation and to adaptability or agility or change. And, you know, if there's one thing that is truly a constant in this world that we live in right now, it is that the only constant is change.
So let me ask you this. You're somebody who's flexible and willing to change. And since I can't do analysis on myself, you're now my guinea pig. You, as somebody who is willing to take all of these things on, had some sort of experience in your life that triggered a spark, a way of continuing to look at the world and find these changes and embracing them and seeing what their values are. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you got this bug that you just felt the need to learn these things, where you appreciate it? Like, what was your eye-opening moment? And is it possible for us to take those sort of moments, manufacture them to build a culture that's willing to take those risks?
Well, I think it's a fantastic question, because it's not the first time I've been asked that question, but it's a fantastic question at this part of the conversation, because I think it's from a sequencing and a relevance standpoint is just exactly at the right place at the right time. So, and the reason I'm saying that is just last night, I'm looking at my daughter's term paper, and she is a sophomore in high school. And I think I got that right. I'm still learning the whole freshman, sophomore, junior, senior thing. She's first of all, like, I'm still a little bit kind of concerned about the fact that somehow she wrote a 19-page term paper on the debate over the League of Nations and Article 10. And I learned a lot about Woodrow Wilson. I learned a lot about the League of Nations. But the thing that came out in this term paper is the failure of Woodrow Wilson's failure and to influence ultimately the success of the League of Nations actually paved the way for the formation of the United Nations. And they were able to actually address and build on the failure and the learnings in order to create, an organization that still stands today. And no matter what you think about it, whether it's working or not working or effective or not effective. But the point was, and I said to her last night, the actual failure at the time was not discernible or noticeable. Nobody could see the lemonade in the lemons at the time. But look at what happened so many years afterwards. And this is all part of my response to you, which is sometimes in life, the big decisions are made for us as opposed to made by us. To answer your question, I would say I was very fortunate to work for an incredibly dynamic company in South Africa. Those that have listened to me on Across the Sound or Jaffe Juice or, you know, through even, you know, my writings or whatever would know that I worked for a company called Nando's Chickenland in South Africa. I was the third marketing employee in the entire global organization. And just firsthand how much I learned about things that really weren't even about technology in terms of purpose and authenticity and irreverence and identity and customer service and many of the things that I've been able to carry forward and carry with me today. So at a very influential time and a formative time in my own professional career, I was learning by doing in the best sandbox or kind of, you know, space possible. The other thing for me was, you know, look, I had a corporate job. I was in the agency world working for a creative agency, not a coincidence, but the same agency that was our agency when I worked at Nando's. And this was at the time during the formation of the media agencies. And because I was running the interactive media department, I was moving out into the formation of what was at the time OMD. And I think there was a general reluctance on my side and also a reality. The reluctance was, I'm not a media guy. I'm a creative guy. I'm a strategic guy. I don't lend myself to the left brain side of the business, but more the right brain. And I was definitely kind of dragging my feet and not happy about that move. The other part of it was that, you know, myself and four or five other contemporaries from all the other Omnicom creative agencies at the time were all basically moving together to form one company. And there was only going to be one director of interactive media, and it wasn't me in the end. And so at that point, you know, that was, you know, as Yogi Berra would say, if you come to a fork in the road, take it. So I had two choices. And my one choice was get right back into it and go find another corporate job or, you know, see where the road led. And even that itself was kind of, you know, make it up as you go along. So, you know, when I ended up writing Jaffe Juice, as we started this interview today, you know, I was approached. I started writing the article. People started reacting really well to my writing and my speaking. So I started to do more of that. That obviously led to the book. I got a little bit of consulting at the beginning. A couple of people said, hey, would you come and talk to our sales group about the media business and about how we can connect with people like you? And suddenly, you know, kind of I got a bit of a taste of it. And, you know, before I knew it, it's a personal story, but it's kind of funny. I suddenly, you know, I got a consulting business and I started looking at the numbers. I was like, wait a second. If I get, you know, I started doing, you know, I had a project, I worked out how much I was being paid per hour. And I said, wait a second, if I do this 40 hours a week multiplied by blah, 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 you know, I could make $3.2 million. I'm making up this number. I could make $3.2 million a year. But of course, you know, the little secret there, which, you know, if you're a consultant, you would know, is yes, that assumes that you're completely full and everybody's booking you at that rate, you know, kind of 24/7, 365. The reality as a consultant is, of course, you eat what you kill and you don't always get. And of course, anybody that wants more of your time is going to want it at a discount. But that was the taste that I got, which is I can work on my time and on my terms doing something that I love. Guess what? I'm going to do more of this. And I haven't looked back since.
How did you make those decisions at the time? So you were presented with a fork in the road and you decided to take it. So was that a process of you looking at it and just choosing kind of gut instinct? Were there people along the way that kind of helped you either by mentoring you or positioning you in the right way or giving you advice or anything like that? How did your career, because you could say like it was all just a matter of like, well, I did this and then that happened. I kind of followed it down. And I think we all kind of have those, you make a decision and then that leads into something. But I'm curious about what the other pieces of information or the influences of other people that had on you, because you spoke a little bit about when you were at that company in South Africa about the culture and about people and about falling, you know, really discovering this irreverent side of yourself and things like that. And that's that has nothing to do with technology. That's more about the people you're surrounded with and how they enable you to discover things about yourself. So how did your career take that path as a result of the people that were around you?
So for me, and you know, everyone is different, I'm not great at getting advice from people, and I'm even worse at taking advice. A lot of it kind of relates to, you know, the fact that my dad died when I was 4 years old, and I never had that father figure and that male influence in my life. My mom was out there hustling and earning a living, and in many respects, that's a lesson in of itself. And I never really wanted to burden her with my issues and my problems, and I was also the oldest of three, so there was no older brother or sister. So I'm just used to kind of just figuring it out and doing it myself, and that's me. But what I will say is that we live in an incredible world and at an incredible time where there is so much, I would say, generosity out there, and people that are so open and gracious about giving advice and being a resource in a sense. And certainly social media has played a huge part of that kind of discovery and that kind of growth, in a sense. Even the lean startup methodology is all about, hey, listen, don't, you know, over-engineer or overproduce this or overthink it. Just go and ask people. So, you know, and I suppose that even goes back to Sam Walton, right, which was management by walkabout. There is a lot of advice to be given, and there's a lot of people that are very happy to help. Even Mitch and I went down that path as well, which is I told him to go and start his own podcast. You know, he wanted to be a co-host of Across the Sound. And I was like, no, go do it yourself. You know, you've got a compelling voice. You know, and Six Pixels of Separation was born. And so, you know, so it works both ways. But for me, I think I really didn't seek advice, and sometimes I struggle with that. Like, I don't have anyone that I look to that I would say, this is my, you know, maybe Walt Disney, if you can dream it, you can do it. I have these like kind of doyens or these, you know, people that I admire throughout history and kind of try and model myself around or at least part of their vision in a sense. But there's no one person. I wish I could tell you that it's, you know, it's Seth Godin or it's, you know, or whomever. None of those people necessarily, you know, inspire me to the point where I try and model myself on them. I try and be my own best role model.
So here's what I think, just from what you said, and it caught me as soon as you started on talking about this. So I think that primary influence, if I were to like just hearing that, I think it was your mom, because what you said at the beginning was that the reason you are the way you are is that it was basically on you. You didn't want to burden her with it. You saw her hustling, and that shaped how you don't seek out those mentors. And even when you bring up the people that you do, like people like Walt Disney, these aren't people that you have to burden with anything, because they're words in a book, or they're people that are no longer around. So I think that's really interesting. Yeah. So like I think actually when it comes down to it, like what set you off on that course to be that kind of autonomous hustler yourself, I think that goes back to that.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And look, if anything, not only am I not downplaying it, but the influence that my mother's had in my life and what I think of her and how she is truly my hero and my role model, I could not overstate that enough. And I would be doing it until the end of time. So you're absolutely right about that, in a sense. Again, you know, it's funny because they say that sometimes, you know, the definition of evil is the absence of good. And sometimes the absence, it again goes back to target, right? Contraction. Sometimes you can create a space by taking a step back. So the absence of and the void of not having a father was filled by a mother who absolutely played a role. She wasn't, you know, she didn't dial it in or wasn't, you know, parenting by correspondence. But ultimately, it's being able to recognize sometimes that, you know, that by not having something, you actually have something else, and recognizing that dynamic is a very powerful one.
Yeah, I think it's that whole playing with a chip on your shoulder or the vacuum that's created by something not being there, kind of sucking in what's needed. You talked a little bit about how, you know, especially with the birth of social media and things like that, that there is so much generosity and advice and information that's out there that just the way you talked about seems like you're a little bit more open to it. Is that something that you feel like has developed in you as you've gone throughout your career, where you're more open to, you know, still being discerning about where the advice comes from, but do you find yourself more open to other people's influence in helping you shape the way you perceive things?
I would say that I'm, you know, things that are part of my own personal growth are to be better at listening versus talking. Very, very hard for me. I do tend to kind of, I'm just used to it. It's who I am. I'm the guy on stage talking, as the CEO of the company. You know,
and you've been rewarded for that. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, people who listen less and talk more do generally. It's because we're rewarded for doing that. We're expected to have the answers.
Right. But it's a skill as well to, you know, as I often train it sometimes, and I say, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth. You should use that in direct proportion. Listening is an art and a skill, and everybody could do more of it, including and especially myself. So that's the one part. The other one is it's not so much the advice, it's criticism. Criticism is hard because I'm a very emotional and a very passionate person. And you know, and some people are really bad at giving advice. So one of the, like, I have a word for me that is like fingers on a chalkboard is concern, you know, and it's like you'll go to a brand market and you'll give them an idea and they'll be like, but my concern is, I'm like, why don't you tell me what you like about it before you tell me what you don't like about it? And it's almost like this idea. So I've actually tried, whenever I'm talking to startups, I bite my lip and I tell them what I like about what they've just shared with me, and I build on that. It's kind of like what Google calls yes and, or like a lot of design sprint thinking calls yes and versus no but.
Yeah, I've heard it also called the shit sandwich. Like, you have to basically say the really nice things on the outside and then the shit comes in the middle. So like, I have something bad to say about it, but I'm first going to tell you how great you are.
Yeah, and so I kind of try and be better at that. And so those are the two things, you know, that I would say, which is listen more and be able to be better at taking criticism, especially, you know, if it's constructive criticism. And to me, like, combination of those two things becomes very powerful.
Are those the sort of things that if you could go back in time and give yourself a lesson, those would be the sort of pieces of advice?
Would have to be. I mean, would have to be. And I'll just tell you a little personal anecdote, because you are the Oprah of podcasts, of business podcasts. So this is one of my best, my favorite stories, I should say. So, you know, I studied marketing at the University of Cape Town in South Africa, and Professor Philip Kotler wrote Consumer Behavior, one of the textbooks I learned from. And when I came to this country 20 years ago, I applied to do an MBA. I didn't get in, but one of the schools that I applied to was Kellogg, one of the best marketing reputations, you know, in the country. And I went to Kellogg for my interview, so at least I got one. And I went and attended one of Philip Kotler's classes, and I went up to him, you know, and I like shook his hand. I said, oh, I'm a big fan and this and that and whatever. And he looked, he was probably like, that's great. Security. I got a stalker. But anyway, so left and didn't get in, but that was my little Philip Kotler moment. Years later, and I'm talking about, I guess, 10 years later, maybe, I end up keynoting in Caracas, Venezuela, probably the first and last time I'll ever be in Caracas. And there are only two keynotes. It's a full day's conference, but there are 2 3-hour seminars. The one keynote is myself. The other one is Professor Philip Kotler. And so they're both now we're on equal billing. And I went up to him and I said, would he be interested in having a drink afterwards? And he said he would love to. We go up to the penthouse floor of this of this hotel. We've got the whole bar or the whole floor to ourselves. And we sit for an hour and we just talk. But you know what? It was so interesting. And I was aware of it at the time, but I was unable to do anything about it. I spoke, he listened, right? There's the advice. And he was taking notes vociferously, and I was taking no notes. So, you know, talk about the still learning at the age of, I guess he was 79, 80, 81, 82 at the time, and how he was sponging up, you know, what the new guy had to say. So the old guy was evolving and learning all the time. And it always sat with me, and I kind of walked away going, idiot, like, you know, like you should have picked his brain. You should have kind of, you know, taken all his knowledge rather than try to impress him with how much you had. So that to me is like one of my most personal anecdotes, which is, yeah, if you go, you never look back in regret, but at every juncture, and everyone listening to this, you know, listen more, learn more. And even when you get all of that, the shit sandwich, look for the nugget in it. Although, you know, I mean, if it's a shit sandwich, you might want to throw the whole thing away.
That was an interesting choice of wording. I mean, it's one of the reasons
there might be the diamond in the shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of the reason that I do this podcast, honestly, is I just like talking to smart people and listening to what they have to talk about. I mean, it's sometimes tough for me to sit here and not talk. But what I like about the format of a podcast like this is that I get that opportunity to just listen in and hear what people are all about and what their experiences were and all that sort of stuff. Now, our podcast listeners right now, while they might be able to send us a tweet or they might be able to comment or leave a review, which we encourage them to do, right now they're stuck listening. So right now that means that you have the stage, and given the type of work that you do, I'm sure you have a ton of good advice for everybody. But I'd like to ask you, if people listening right now were to end this episode at the end of it, go off and do one thing that could better their life or their career outside of listen more, that would be one, obviously. What else? What's one thing do you think in today's day and age, in 2017, people could go out and do, a skill they could learn, something they could do, a book they could read, whatever it might be, that you think would make a big difference for anybody listening?
Well, you know, I think the answer would be, you know, connected with this idea of learning, which is, you know, you spoke about kind of not talking much today, but kind of learning as well. I learn by doing, and I learn by, in this case, I'm learning stuff. I'm being asked questions that I've never been asked before, or I'm responding in different ways. I've often, you know, one of the things I think I said in enjoying the conversation, or maybe it was even all the way back with Life After the 30-Second Spot, is I said production is the new consumption. You know, when you produce, when you create content, when you create, you know, ideas, you are in fact consuming them by producing, and you are learning by doing that as well. The number one question I used to get asked a lot was, how do you know so much? And how are you always on top of everything? And how do you stay on top of everything? I said, by blogging and podcasting and creating content. You know, that's why I'm always so willing and excited to be on a podcast. Not only am I supporting an industry that I helped create to a degree. I mean, I'm one of a cast of thousands, no doubt, but one of the first marketing podcasts out there. And not only am I supporting my podcasting brothers and sisters, but by being on these shows, I'm learning too. And so that's the advice. The advice is produce, create. And by doing that, recognize, you're not just gifting your IP to others. You're actually getting smarter in the process.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I had this, you ever have one of those situations where like you're laying in bed and you're about to fall asleep, and then you have like an aha type idea and you write it down, hopefully, so you don't forget it. So I was the other night, like last week or a couple weeks ago, I had that. You ever hear the phrase, you'll never learn anything while you're talking? You never learn anything new while you're talking. I've heard that expression before. I don't know if it's, I might be saying it incorrectly, but the idea is that like, it's similar to that. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And the idea was, you don't learn anything new when you're talking. And I vehemently disagree with that to a lot of the same reasons that you just said. I find that when I blog, because I've been blogging since 2008, not nearly as long as you or others, but what I found early on in blogging is that the act of blogging caused me to have to think. It caused me to have to learn about things. When I get up on stage and I talk about something, I learn a new way to communicate something when I hit a roadblock and people aren't understanding me. So I agree with that. I'm not saying that obviously you should talk your way through life and to not, you know, and miss all that you can learn from listening. But I do think that there's something to be said in exactly what you're talking about, that through the act of creation, you will learn things.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. And it's, you know, maybe again, the corollary of that is you got to be in it to win it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I want to take you through some rapid fire questions because I know we're hitting about at the end of our time limit. So I'm going to hit you with some rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. First, what are the apps in your dock?
In my dock, I would have to check. Well, I think it's the basic ones. It's phone, mail, Safari, and music.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, those are the four basic ones, right?
Yeah, but you can move them around. You can put whatever's important to you there. That's interesting. You left the standards.
Why not? I use all four pretty regularly.
All right, cool. So what's the one application, mobile, desktop, web, doesn't matter, any sort of application that you can't live without because it just makes your life so much easier?
I mean, there are many, but I always talk about, like, I use Tripcase, which is because I travel a lot, so it's really, really helpful. And then, you know, obviously on health and wellness, I've got Garmin and MapMyFitness and Nike. So why things? So more like a category in a sense that health and wellness and fitness is a big part of my life.
So you're into the whole quantified self thing for self-improvement. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so every single social media site tomorrow is to be deleted, and you, Joe Jaffe, are the one anointed to pick the one that survives. Which one is it?
None of them, man. Let's do a complete reboot and let's invent something that hasn't been created.
That's an answer I will never get again, I'm sure of it.
I mean, come on, let's spend more time just connecting with humans. Look at me, I've become so old and stodgy. I will say that the one I love the most at the moment, just because of the creative aspect, is Instagram. But the one that has not been given its day in court and deserves it should have grown much quicker, which is ironic because that was in direct violation of what it stood for, was an app called I'll say it in Americanese, called Path or Path, you know, which is just 40 connections at the time. And then they changed it, you know, which is I'm just going to connect with the people that mean the most to me.
Yep.
You know,
I thought that was such a good concept when it came out and when they opened it up, I was like, all right, well, you guys are done. Because when they kept it was 150 connections it went to. It's like the Dunbar's number.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, the strategic problem they had, which wasn't their fault, was somebody tries to connect with you and you're like, yeah, sorry, you're not in my 40. It's like, well, you know, fuck you, basically. Yeah. So I think that's the problem. How do you create something where you find someone on it and then they go like, actually, you're not one of my top guys, sorry.
It's sort of like using your close friends list on Facebook. Like you should be able to let everyone in, but the only people that get into your actual path are the ones that you designate and they don't get to know that, but. Interesting. Yeah, I always thought that was a good one. All right. Well, obviously, we're going to link to all of your books, but I want to ask you if there is one book that every business person should read, what would it be? And obviously, all of yours are included in that.
I mean, it would have to be. I always struggle with this question because I don't read as many business books as I should.
Oh, it doesn't have to be a business book, by the way, to clarify. It can be any book that you think people should read. But the people reading it are business people. So it could be, you know, something that's not about business, but it's a book that every person should read for one reason or another.
I mean, I really struggle to answer that question because there's never been a book for me that has like changed my life or that has become like my Bible, my
really?
Business Bible or even, no, there hasn't. Or even a long time ago, there were books. I mean, a long time ago, because again, as someone who actually creates content, and also is part of this whole and exposed to so much content. It doesn't have to be a hard cover, you know, book per se. I mean, what is a book today? A book is different. There were a lot of books in, you know, 20 years ago, formative books that were like raving fans and, you know, and Richard Branson's book. And there are so many great books out there. The, you know, I'm not kind of like, I'm almost saying to call it just one book is to do a disservice to all of the books, because there are so many brilliant books that have touched on so many different things, so many different ways. So that's kind of like a bit of a cop out. But honestly, my honest answer is I don't like the question, because I think they're just too many. I think they're too many good and great books.
All right, fair. So there's not a single one that struck you as like, this is the one.
Not me.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, fair. You've now answered two of the questions unlike I think anybody ever will.
Good.
But here's my final question for you, and this is my favorite question. If you could have any one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, man, I think I've – there's so many. There's invisibility. I think that would be pretty cool. Being able to fly.
You can only pick one in this question, by the way. I'm going to hold your feet to the fire on it. You only get one superpower. It's enough that I'm giving you a superpower.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go with one of my favorite characters from when I was a kid, which is Flash, which is speed. Speed. He can do some pretty cool things according to my 9-year-old son.
Yeah.
Alternate timelines.
It's true. I'm watching the CW version of it. It's pretty damn good.
There you go.
All right, cool. Well, Mr. Jaffe, you have been so wonderful to come onto the show today. I really honestly do appreciate you coming on. I've wanted to talk to you for a while, so glad we got the chance to do this. I want to give you a chance right now to just completely take over and talk about anything that you want to promote, where people can get in touch with you, where they can get involved with things that you're working on, anything that you want to talk about or promote right now. The world is completely yours right now. This is your podcast.
Well, I actually have to go, so I'm gonna do it really short and sweet. Perfect. Can find me, Jaffe Juice, on most social networks, the ones that survived the purge that we discussed. And if you want to find out more about my day job, Evolution, go to startupsforbrands.com, where you can find out a little bit more about how we connect early stage startups with corporates.
Cool. We'll put every bit of that in the show notes. Thank you again for spending some time with me. We ran much longer than I thought we were going to, but it was great talking to you.
It was my pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Come back next time. That was so much fun. I can't even believe the guests that we get. I mean, can you believe the guests that we get?
I can, actually. I schedule them.
Awesome. Well done. Well, this episode for me was an absolute blast, and I hope everyone listening really enjoyed it. But now that we're in this fun little outro, what should people do next?
I think they should check us out on iTunes.
Definitely go check us out on iTunes, and when you get there, subscribe, drop us a review, and then what's that one last thing we want them to do?
I don't know.
Share the episode.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. It's in the name. So please share this episode, tell everyone you know, and we'll see you on the next episode of Shareable.
Bye.